Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Wait, wait, wait. Before we start, just want to make sure we're clear here. While this podcast talks about sobriety, mental health, and addiction, it is not meant to replace professional medical advice. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety.
I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're ex-sisters-in-law, brought together in marriage and bonded through our sobriety journey.
Join us as we talk sobriety, addiction, and everything in between. You're in for quite a ride. And our Substack is buzzing with amazing content, from creative mocktail recipes to insightful courses and reflective exercises. There is something for everyone. Don't miss out. It's a great way to add some extra joy and depth to your journey. Check it out. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety. We are so excited today to have Amity Cooper on the podcast.
Amity is a seasoned entrepreneur, mental health professional, and lifebook facilitator who's on a mission to help people rebuild their lives after rehab, embrace emerging technologies in mental health, and design a life they truly love.
From her 40-acre equine ranch in Colorado to her groundbreaking work with the Clinical Career Collective, Amity's approach is holistic, compassionate, and innovative. Welcome, Amity.
Welcome.
Thank you, ladies. I'm so excited to be here. I already feel like we are kindred spirits.
So can you share your journey from the for-profit world to becoming a mental health professional, which actually Kathleen has a similar trajectory, and then you became a therapist?
Yeah, I think this really speaks to probably a lot of people out there who get into the healing arts later on in life. I see just in my own professional trajectory when I work with clients, there's a lot of encore careers out there, and choosing a life of service becomes really appealing when all of the external stuff just isn't as satisfying as it used to be. And that really was true for me. I came out of university like ready to hit the road and work in the arts, and I found myself moving to Denver, and I met my husband, and then I went back to school. I'm kind of going back a little bit further here, but I ended up getting a degree of my first master's in conflict resolution. And there's a reason why I bring that up. It's because I always knew that I wanted to work with people. I wanted to help people, but I was intimidated by the vulnerability that was needed to be in this field, to really sit knee to knee with somebody. I wanted to do compassionate work, but I needed more space between myself and the clients that I was going to be working with. But so I got that degree and it was wonderful training for the other things that I ended up doing. And I had an idea and I followed it and I ended up starting my own fashion accessories business. And I was in the for-profit world. I was a successful entrepreneur for about 18 years. And hoofing my wares from fashion to actually chocolate, I really found a sweet spot in that work of manufacturing and coming up with an idea and being able to take it to market successfully. So I had a lot of varied experiences, all walks of life with different people from manufacturers to, you know, presenting my stuff at big shows. Like it was great until it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And in 2015, I had a moment of crisis. I was working on my chocolate business. And when things, you're only in manufacturing, unfortunately, you're only as good and productive as your next factory. So you're always looking for a place to produce your widgets. And I literally had this moment of like sliding doors. You know, it's like one day I had a successful business where I was producing product, and the next day I lost my factory. So I went from having a business to not having a business. Now, for many people out there, if you've been around the block a few times, this happens. You know, you have a job one day and then you don't the next. And it can throw you into turmoil. It is the classic existential crisis of like you've fallen down, you don't know how to get back up again. And that took me a good year to figure out where I was going to go next. And what I came back to was this idea of wanting and feeling driven by something internal rather than something external. So that brought me into the world of finally mental health counseling. Now, that's a very long story, but I think it adds flavor to why I'm sitting with you now.
So how do mental health and recovery intersect in your practice?
Well, I would say recovery for me is a broader term than the traditional addictions category. What I find when I'm sitting and working with a client that these life fissures, if you will, these moments of crisis really put you in a place of like, I'm doing this thing, the world paradigm that I've been living in doesn't suit me anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't identify with this life that I've been leading. And I don't have the tools and I don't know, I have to rewrite that. I have to compose something different because this process, the way I've been doing things doesn't work. It doesn't align. And so at this very point, these crossroads of life really dictate what life looks like in recovery from something else that you've been living that doesn't apply. So I look at that in a broad spectrum from a position of redefining your first principles, coming up with a North Star that you drive your life forward towards. It's something to aim for. It's something to align to. And then I take it from there. And actually, the person that I'm working with, our clients take it from there. I feel blessed and humbled by the fact that they're allowing, I'm a witness to their process. I help guide them and provide them information and practice. They get to practice with me. Like, what does this feel like? What holding the tensions in their lives? And I provide that safe container in order to do that.
Mm-hmm. What are the biggest challenges that you think in treating mental health and addiction simultaneously?
I really work with the things that are unseen in a person's life. And the way I look at addiction is it's a coping mechanism. And you cannot start, when somebody comes to you and presents in a way, and they're like, you can't tease apart. It's very hard to see. And you can validate this and correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. But I look at this, like somebody's going to come to me with signs of anxiety or depression. I'm just going to stay on that scale, right? And we don't know what's driving the anxiety or the depression. But when somebody comes and says, well, I've been coping, I've been using any hodgepodge of tools or tricks of the trade to get through the day because I cannot manage myself, you have to deal with the addiction first. You have to tease apart, and you have to, if you will, learn how to speak to that addiction and talk about it, and to be able to see the person underneath in a clear mind, with a clear state and cleaned up before all those other issues. They're working in concert together. I never see them like in two separate buckets. But is it true for you that if somebody is addicted, and you got to get them clean first before you can even start tackling?
So for sure, it's interesting because I was doing a consult last night with a psychiatrist for a client of mine, and I won't actually do couples therapy if there's an active addiction going on where there's no treatment, because how I view it is that it's like a third person in the marriage. Like, it's so significant. It's so, you have to focus on that first before you do the couples therapy. Now, not every therapist has that view. Some therapists very much will do couples therapy with someone in active addiction, but that's not what I do. And I was explaining this to the psychiatrist that I was speaking to last night, because I think about it's all encompassing for a person, right? How can they focus on the relationship, even though it's impacting the relationship, but how can they put the work into the relationship when they're also having this affair, in a sense, with the addiction? It's hard to do that.
Yes, I see that. I completely agree with you. It's like the addiction's driving the bus and the individual is in the passenger seat, and actually probably in the trunk of the car or the bus. And I use that metaphor so much. I'm sorry. So I have to come up with different ways. What seat are you in today? But it's just this idea of who's in control of your life. Well, right now, it's a whole plethora. You can pick from it. It's window shopping. It doesn't matter if it's the drugs, the alcohol, the sex, the gambling. Individuals that I see who are high performers, you know, it's the buzz, it's the high that they get from moving into getting a successful deal done. It doesn't matter. But when that need is in control there, you don't know where that person is. You have to figure out who that person is.
Yes, agreed.
But I have been and continue to sort of navigate the ups and downs of family members with mood disorders and this constant roller coaster ride of where the disorder is running the show, and to get clear on who that person is outside of the mania, outside of the depressive period. I think we can all relate. I feel like I can relate and be empathetic to a person's experience of struggle and strife, because this is life school, you know? We're in it, and there's going to be ups and downs and challenges, and whatever our skill set is at the time always has to be adjusted and tweaked to so that we can grow and meet the challenges head on. So that's my experience.
Yeah. And what role does the mind, body, spirit alignment play in your practice? I know, for example, with my therapist, like I'm just trying to figure out what happened in my childhood and my marriage. We're not aligning mind, body, and spirit. So That seems like a more holistic approach. And so how do you approach that?
I love that question. For me, and a lot of this is a lot of work that comes from working with other clients on this. I mean, I think that there is, if we look at the history and the work that's really centered around career development, you know, we have these buckets and we have these orientations, right? For the general public, we really sort of talk about three areas of life. We talk about our relationships, we talk about our career, and we talk about our finances. And that doesn't make up the whole person, does it? It goes back to this externally driven perspective that's placed upon us in the world. And teasing apart all of those three major factors really reveal that there's about 12 different categories, 12 areas, 12 domains that shape a whole person. And that comes down to your health and fitness and your body. It comes to your character, your spiritual orientation, how you set your course moving forward with your relationships in your life, how you parent, how you are intimate with others, and how you interact with your nuclear family. And then you have all the pieces of a career and your finances. And ultimately, it ends with that life vision of how you want to lead. And all of your, I see it, that all of your first principles, your views, your character traits, and all of those values that you hold are going to be explored in a variety of ways through each of these domains, if this makes sense. It's a much broader tapestry of exploring a person's life. And so all of those factors of mind, body, and spirit are intermixed all the time in the areas and in these domains and the interactions that we have with the outside world and the inside world.
That's a great answer, by the way. It's to a kind of a complicated question. But what do you think some of the most impactful habits or practices are for maintaining long-term recovery?
I think for anybody who has come to a point in their life where they know and that the things they've been doing don't work for them anymore. Mm-hmm. In my experience and what I have witnessed is that all of the home bases, all of the places that you thought were safe are not anymore. Mm-hmm. Usually your core group of friends and even family members are no longer helpful. They're not going to be the people that have your back anymore. The job probably is missing. So you're looking back at these domains of your life and you realize that this doesn't work anymore. And so you're back to basics. What do you believe in? What do you stand for? And how are you going to make this happen? And how are you going to live by those rules moving forward? So it goes back to a life of recovery is a broad term of, shit, I've fallen down and I got to figure out how to get back up again mm-hmm. and do it according to the way that works for me. Mm-hmm. And that comes with the deep dive and the doing the deep work, that internal work of figuring out who you are. And that course can only be determined by you. You can have the added support, which is so wonderful. If there is an aftercare program, I'm thinking specifically, you've been in a facility, you have 30 to 90 days, whatever, and you're coming out and you're walking into the light again and you're like, oh my God, where do I go? How do I do this? It's one step in front of the other and find a community, find a peer group that works and understands your place. Hopefully those skills and those tools have been provided in that facility. And so you've already been working on this toolbox for yourself before you leave. But a lot of times I think people feel like they're, and this is the institutional challenge, is mm-hmm. that we've done our job, we've helped you get clean, and we've given you some basic stuff to go out, but the rest is up to you. That's pretty much true for all of us. It's up to you how you're going to set your life course forward, moving forward, but finding and building a community, using, going to meetings, finding the 12 step, whatever, finding a mentor to hold your hand, to be with you along the way. I feel like that is the most important thing, first and foremost, is to know that there's somebody else who is just a few steps ahead of you. And then at the same time, work really hard on figuring out who you are mm-hmm. away. Mm-hmm. And different from where you've been.
In terms of the toolbox, how important and how do you help clients stay grounded and present in their daily lives? I know it's something I still struggle with. Kathleen's always saying to me, that's the story you're telling yourself. And so how do you help your clients? She just says it. She doesn't help me with it.
Not your therapist.
Saying.
I'm like, poor Sonia. She just wants the care and compassion and empathy that I give my clients. She's craving it from me. And then
I'll
I'm
take
like
a little Kathleen, you that... can pass it my way too. I mean, like we all need
I'm
that.
Just like, Sonia, what's the story you're telling yourself? Yeah. Is that true? Yeah. I'm just like so.
And then she like will hang up.
And
then
I'll be like,
stop
okay,
texting.
I gotta go. Yeah. I gotta go.
So your question is, what do I recommend? How do I do that? I could talk about it for myself, and I could talk about the things that I tell my clients or I recommend to my clients. Yeah. Well, first and foremost, it's routine and schedule. Mm. I love that both of you say you're morning people, and yeah. I think having an extra hour a day where there's quiet, where I can hear myself think, I'm allowed to be in that liminal state, just waking up, and I do my best work early in the morning, in quiet, mm-hmm. in solitude. I set my intention. I have little tricks. I have a morning routine. I have an evening routine. And then life happens all the way in the middle. But I try to keep things really tight about accomplishing. You know, these are the nuts and bolts. It's almost like my own treatment plan, if you will. It's like I know what I'm capable of doing. I know what pushes me out of that zone of genius or zone of focus. And I try to keep it really tight and clean for myself. And I recommend the same thing for, first and foremost, I feel like when clients come to me and they feel really pulled and you can see it in their affect, like they're just so scattered. It's because everything else is, again, dictating. Somebody else is conducting their life mm-hmm. and they don't realize, they haven't become aware yet that they are the conductor, that they are, and they have this whole orchestra that they can direct and create beautiful music from in their life. And I think by giving them some grounding exercises, okay, now this is where nature comes in for me. This is a big factor of what it takes. Like we're so consumed with looking at our digital life that mm-hmm. we don't look up and see the trees and outside to the fields. And so I spent a lot of time outside. It's so grounding. I'm sure you both have that experience. There's something that just perks up when I take a walk with my dog. I am a non-traditional therapist in the sense that I don't have a pre-written treatment plan and I'm going to say you're going to do these steps along the way. I'm just identifying with my person having a human experience and trying to figure out where they can feel regulated and in control of themselves and be present to their life. So I do bring in polyvagal mm-hmm. activities, breathing, humming, stomping the ground, getting grounded mm-hmm. with their feet. I do a lot of walk and talks with my clients. So it is, I get them out of the room. Mm-hmm. It's essential for me because they're out, they're only stuck with me for 50 a 50-minute hour, right? And then they go out and they're walking in the world elsewhere. So I want them to feel safe walking around in the world. Mm-hmm. That's my job.
I've just recently introduced walk and talk sessions in my practice. And actually, I'm bringing in more somatics to help regulate mm-hmm. the nervous system. I find it so important. I'm also, I wouldn't say Amity, like a traditional talk therapist in that sense. The body is so connected to the mind and spirit. They're all so connected. So if we're just talking about the mind, we're missing huge components.
We're missing everything else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What are polyvagal exercises?
If your listeners and everybody else who are unfamiliar with the polyvagal system, it was developed and discovered really by a researcher named Stephen Porges. Mm-hmm. And he brought to the fore all this amazing research about this, how our vagus nerve runs up and down our spine, and it basically, it connects everything. It's how we interact with the world, how we receive information, and it tells us specifically, it's our primary interactions with the world, like our flight, freeze, all of these functions are getting signals from our vagus nerve. Mm-hmm. And so we notice, I just went through a training of this with his right-hand lady, Deb Dana. So I would definitely pursue looking at her books, because she takes this very complex neurology and explains it to the layperson. You'll see people who are dysregulated, and this often runs in addictions, right? It's the name of the game, right? People are just walking around dysregulated, and they're using whatever tool they can to get access to feel safe and to feel at home in their bodies and out in the world, right? So that drug of choice is really just their need of resourcing safety. And the vagus nerve allows us to tune in and to understand between what's going on in ourselves biologically and outside in the world about where our safety lies. And often you'll see people that come in and their affect might look very jittery, very scattered, or whatever. They're in a sympathetic state. That is a dysregulated state. Mm-hmm. Their bodies don't feel like home. They are craving something, an external source to bring them back to homeostasis. And breathing is free mm-hmm. and simple and direct for all of us. So the basic box breathing system of 4 counts in, 3 counts release, and you just keep doing it around and around and around, within a matter of 2 minutes, somebody can really be present again and calm down and be focused and be attentive and hearing what you're saying. Humming activates the vagus nerve in the back of the head at the base of the spine. So it's really these, to me, they're simple. And now we actually have, you know, these are factors that we probably all had resources to. We just didn't have a name yet. Mm-hmm. And with Stephen's work, we now have a manual. We know what to call these things. But you can see in a matter of 50 minutes with a client who's struggling with addiction, they're usually moving between a dorsal state, which is I'm shut down, I can't move, to a sympathetic where they're agitated and they're all over the place and they're scattered and they go back and forth. And you'll see mm-hmm. it constantly running like that.
Also, in addition to humming, singing, which is really, when you think about it, people who sing in the shower or just singing along to a song in the car will help you relax that nervous system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's kind of cool.
It is really cool to me too.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is really cool. So I wanted to shift gears a little bit. What does designing a life you love mean for you and your practice and your clients?
Well, I always felt when I was going through my clinical training that things were missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had spent a good 15 years in psychology.
Hey, football fans. BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Go analysis. Mm-hmm. And I was really comfortable exploring the unknown, the unseen, and I really rely a lot on my dreams for information and accessing source for me. Mm-hmm. And that's not the model that's taught to us. I mean, it's behaviorist. It's, God bless them. I love them. But it's not my way. And mm-hmm. when I discovered the life book system and that idea that our life is beyond these three areas of focus and looking at this broad picture again of all of these ways in which we function and walk in the world, again, from our health and fitness all the way to designing this life vision of ourselves, it put all the pieces sort of fit together for me. Mm-hmm. And I knew that if it resonated with me on finding and focusing on the life that I wanted to lead within this sort of open system that you drop in at your beliefs, your values, and your first principles, and you could physically write it out and craft of a living, breathing document to be your guide, as the life book system is, I was like, this is magic. This is the way, this is how I know is the tool that puts to shame all the other theories for me. It takes control. Like I'm crafting my own, I'm design building my life. Mm-hmm. And that really resonates for me. And I found that it resonates for my clients as well, because they've never thought about these things. Mm-hmm. We tend to live in mediocrity. We settle for mm-hmm. what's presented. We don't think that we have a lot of agency or efficacy in our mm-hmm. lives. And with this, by exploring these topics and literally putting the time into writing them out, it changes the game for people.
Yeah. Can you walk us through the life book system a little bit?
Yeah. So I can give you some background first. So John and Missy Butcher are the founders of the life book system. And he's a gentleman that struggled for years with anxiety, performance anxiety. His family started the Precious Moments Company. Remember all those videos? And
yeah.
Well, he came from a family, a very creative family. His father was a serial entrepreneur himself. He took over the business and he was running in the fast lane. And he met his wife very young and they were just living this life. His dad recommended a bunch of self-help books, right? Who mm-hmm. hasn't? Personally, I am a business book junkie, so I always want the shortcut to how I can make something better, right, for my life or my business, whatever it may be. But he was looking for clues. He was looking for direction, and he kept looking to the people that were ahead of him and saying, okay, well, let's try this way or that way. And he realized that although the self-help gurus provided information and guidance, it was their own toolbox. It wasn't his. And so he started collecting information and building out his own mini life book. Like, he'd collect articles, he'd keep journals, he would keep a reference guide to his life and what his experiences were. And when he fell, when he hit that moment of crisis, it was panic attacks, and he could not get out of bed. He could not leave his home. He started writing his rules for life, and it started with his health and fitness and thinking about, this is my body. This is how I show up and walk around in the world. I want to be as healthy as possible. So you ask four essential questions. It's a vision, a strategy, a purpose, and your values, and how it applies to each category. And these are the 12 domains that I've been talking about. And throughout that process, you have an outline of this life book guide, but it's referred to as an open system because you're writing the rules. You're writing and crafting your own narrative. You're putting it in a document that has an outline and it has an agenda to it. If you have these four rules within this one category, how are you? And then you can develop a strategy from that. You work, mm-hmm. That is your own treatment plan. That is your own narrative that sets your course moving forward. And then it becomes a rule book for life. So that's how the life book system process works. And I help facilitate that. And how I can do that kind of work with them.
How can the life book system help if someone's feeling stuck in their current circumstances, like if they're struggling with addiction, for example? Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to put that back on you. If I've just described, like, okay, I've just said, okay, I feel stuck in my life and I don't know where to go to next. Mm-hmm. I'm going to suggest that we explore where you feel stuck, what areas of life feel like you're held back in, and let's figure out some new game plan, a new game plan for you in that. And what do you believe about that? Is that true? Is that valid? Can you ascertain where you got that message from? Where did you get that belief from? And is that serving you anymore? And what are we going to do? If it's still true, rings true for you, then great. How can we set up a plan? How can we set up a way in which a system that's going to help keep you in alignment with that vision? And if it needs to be rewritten, let's do some exploratory work and figure out what that is and how that aligns for you.
I hear elements. So, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard of Bob Proctor.
Yes, I have never read him.
He passed away a couple of years ago, 3 years ago. But what you're saying reminds me a lot about like self-image scripts and like understanding where your beliefs come from. It's something that I use with clients often, like, where does this belief come from? Where are the roots of this belief? And then I also see elements of like narrative therapy in what you're talking about too, creating what is that vision? What is that story? And I love how the life book system, it sounds like it's like taking all these amazing pieces and bringing them together.
And it was from this individual's own struggles and journey. Mm-hmm. And it's what worked for him. And I'm not putting him on a pedestal. We're all fallible, right?
Yeah.
But I truly believe that we are the heroes of our own journey here. And it's a powerful process when you write your life out. You know, there are numerous studies that show the action of pen to paper that validate and make it more concrete whatever action you are setting a course for. And that process is fundamental to writing your life manifesto. Whether you label it a life book or not, it is a powerful process and no one else can do it but you. Mm-hmm. And it's exceptional. It's just exceptional. And it gave me a way to work in with my clients that was more solution focused, mm-hmm. positive psychology oriented, instead of pathologizing their experiences. Changed the dance for me.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to shift gears again. What trends do you see emerging in mental health and wellness in, I'm going to go with the next decade, but I could even say the next 5 years, but.
Can we talk about technology?
Yeah.
Okay. I love this discussion, and thank you for really doing a deep dive on the life book process, because I think it's an extraordinary experience. But shifting gears and talking more about what is on the horizon for our industry at large, is very exciting for me. So I am by no means a true techie, in that I cannot fix your computer. If you get a virus, I don't know what to do with that, okay? But I love tools. I love gadgets. And back in 2020, when the pandemic hit, I realized I have been online for the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I watched all of our colleagues just be deer in headlights when it came to what Zoom was and what telehealth offered. And moving from knee to knee to screen was just foreign to most of us, because we're not introduced and we're not taught or these new ways in which we can deliver therapy in our clinical training. It's just mm-hmm. not available. It's not their mission. But it became mine. And mm-hmm. I launched a virtual summit called Healing Entrepreneurship Summit. And I had Mike Michalowicz, I don't know if you're familiar with him and his work. He created The Profits. He's a business book writer and advocate, and he created the Profits First system. It's an envelope system, yes. of how you take your profits or whatever. So I asked him to be my keynote speaker, and I felt like now was the perfect storm of events to talk about how exponential technologies are intersecting with the mental health industry and how being in business is the best way of being in service as mm-hmm. a clinician, as a mental health provider, because we have all of these amazing tools and skill sets. We are some of the most educated, trained individuals. We have emotional IQ up the yin yang. It still baffles me, but we are deathly afraid of money and mm-hmm. to charge what we're worth. And so I wanted to talk about that. I wanted to pull back the curtain and explore all of these new opportunities. And for the last 5 years, that's what I've been doing. And I write a lot about new technology. And I offer a training course on how to open up your business in 7 days. I give you all the nuts and bolts and the biology of what makes a business and how to pick your ideal client. And I also sprinkle in these new tech tools. And specifically, I offer a VR headset and wow. A little like selfie stick with a video, because I truly believe that video is the fastest growing way to reach more people. I mean, look at social media. Look at how we're exploding on the scene in TikTok. Oh my God, it's crazy. So the trends that are affecting our industry is all of these exponential exploding technologies, mm-hmm. AI, generative AI, the sensory wearable tools that will be able to help us diagnose more efficiently, more clearly, with more reliability. It's amazing. We now see that we can have an AI assistant that could be playing in the background while we're meeting with a client and we're doing our intake. And they could be assessing their intonations of their voice. And they have come back, it's like almost 90% accuracy on mm-hmm. diagnosing somebody with anxiety or depression. It's amazing. The things that we miss, we're limited by our human awareness and understanding, but these tools now have the capability to really bring clear, precise diagnostics to the table.
It's interesting you say this, because yesterday I actually sent out a message to all of my clients because I have implemented AI in my practice. And I have, honestly, it's not an exaggeration, I would spend probably 4 to 6 hours a week writing notes and for my clients, and because they're couples, right? So it's like times two. Mm-hmm. And so I've implemented AI where it's like following all of the privacy rules in my country. And it is life-changing for me as a clinician, because it's not recorded anywhere, but I just get a transcript. It like summarizes it in a beautiful soap note for me, and I'm able to reflect on it. Obviously I read it. One of the things that I'm interested in what you said about the voice and how there can be diagnostic criteria. But one of the things as a therapist I am so present with is someone's nonverbal, what they're saying nonverbally. And I don't know if every therapist is like this, but I am constantly, constantly looking at the nonverbals, picking up on them. And I don't think AI can pick that up yet.
I'm with you. This is our expertise, right? We know how to read and assess and look at the nuances of how a person presents themselves when they come into our office. We know this, okay? Mm-hmm. And no tool is ever going to take away that ability, okay? Mm-hmm. But it can enhance. Now, my guess is that we'll have to come to a point and resolution and acceptance that using transcription services, using video in our sessions with permission,
right,
could be a valid way forward to address those issues of being like having something tracking the visual component to the session. And then it opens Pandora's box, because we're talking about ethics, we're talking about confidentiality, all of these issues that are still in the mix and on the table that are being discussed. It's an ongoing discussion with all of these tools. Mm-hmm. But this is where we're heading. And there is a huge digital gap, I would say, for most of us in society. The last 80 years, I mean, just for shits and giggles here, is like the last 80 years, we have seen such advancements in society and technologies or whatever that have outpaced the last 600 years.
Right.
So, and as an industry, we are the last to get on board with all of this. And that is distressing to me, because of all of the skills and all of the talents that I've just listed, we need to be at the table. We need to be in the discovery phase of all of this new technology, all of these companies that are coming out with amazing tools for us to access and use. But we're maybe like a side note. We're like an on the advisory team, but I want to be on the research and the development side, because they need us. We know that ChatGPT and other prompt engineering, large language models are biased. Well, where does that come from, right? It's the input. It's the data that's been fed to them.
Right.
And there's no oversight for that. They're trying to work in arrears to fix that issue. So I really challenge all of us to really get engaged and to step up into this place. And it's stretching us as an industry. It's stretching us as professionals, but it's here to stay. It's not going to take their jobs. But clinicians who don't incorporate these new tools will become obsolete.
I agree. I totally agree. And it's one of the reasons that I am making steps now, have been learning about it, attending webinars to learn more about it. Because also as a relationship therapist, I don't think it's going to replace what I do, because the nuance between sitting in front of two people, you can't replicate like the things I'm seeing as a human. Energetically, I feel things, right? Like I feel something even sitting in silence. I feel something. I have an intuition, an instinct in my practice, and it leads me to ask questions about that or to make a comment about that. I don't think AI can take that, but wow, can it ever help me do my job? Oh my gosh.
Yes. Hands down, and it's already doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I look at it as wearing two different hats. There's the business owner hat, and we have all of these tools and we use them every day, and they actually are attached to us. I'm sorry we don't have the umbilical cord attached to our cell phone, but that's really what it is. We're walking around and we have all of these productivity and efficiency tools and apps available, the touch of a finger on the phone. And our clients are doing the very same thing, the very same thing. And we're trying to work it out together. Mm-hmm. What I will say, and that cannot be replaced, what I will say is that on the clinical side, the way our tools and these technologies are going to assist us clinically is potentially could solve the mental health crisis that we're facing today about the impact and the far-reaching at scale delivery of services, being able to access, like instead of us as a solopreneur who is trading time for dollars, okay, we max out at 30 clients a week. Now that's not every clinician, but I'm just saying on average, according to the American Counseling Association, we see about 25, 27 clients a week. That seems to be the average. But imagine at scale, if you're running groups, virtual groups, immersive therapy groups, where people are entering into your virtual immersive clinical office, and they are meeting you through their VR headset, the sky's the limit about who you could serve, how you see them, how you interact with them. This is coming. Mm-hmm. And it's coming, and I don't know how we're gonna do it yet, but I'm exploring that. I'm trying to understand what the potential is. And it's about eliminating barriers to services and access to professionals that you can't do it now, but it could change the dance completely. I think by 2030, I think there is this prediction of what's called singularity, where the algorithms, the AI brain is going to converge with the human experience. And at that point, will these entities have sentient, will they be thinking on their own? That is what is being explored right now. And there's a lot of futurists that are talking about it. I can't speak to that, but I mean, it's really the speed at which these advancements are being made is at a clip we've never seen before.
Mm-hmm. Amity, you talked about solopreneurs. What is a therapreneur? You've mentioned it. I mean, I know what it is, but I want you to say what it is.
It's my mashup of words. I see, again, you know, my rally cry is that being in business is the best way to be in service. And as an in-service professional, as a therapist, you are also a business owner. And so I put together the therapist with the heart of a business owner, with the heart of a therapist. So you are a therapreneur.
Oh, wow. I'm a fairpreneur.
You are.
I know. Yay! I feel like I have a new crown. So, what do you hope your clients take away from their work with you, Amity?
I want them to go out and be the people that they're meant to be. And I want them to shine, and I want them to feel purposeful and that they have something to reach for and that they're contributing to the world. That's what I want.
I love that. So, Amity, is there anything? We'd love to have you back because there's a whole section of work that you do in equine-assisted therapy and nature-specific therapy. And before we started recording, I was squealing with delight around talking about this. So we will definitely have you back.
Thank you.
Do you have any final words that you wanted to share with our listeners?
Conversation. It has gone all over the place. And I love that. I really like, it's just being able to talk about all things that are interesting to me. So thank you for giving me a platform to share. I just respect and admire the work that you are all doing. And it's the work that we do makes a difference. Mm-hmm. I really feel that way. And I'm just so privileged and honored and humbled to be part of this world. Like, it is so satisfying. I get that sense from you. You feel like you're really in alignment with what you're doing. And it's nice to be in the room with you.
Very much
so. The shawl makes it look like you're in alignment with what
you're wearing. A shawl?
Yeah, I think it's the shawl.
There's a story to the shawl. But
okay.
Did some Indian shaman give it to you?
I got this in the Himalayan mountains.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, in Dharmashala, where the Dalai Lama lives. I made friends with this is yak wool. I made friends with a woman who was selling this shawl. She was Tibetan, beautiful woman. Her son won a scholarship by I'm going to say the Tibetan government, even though I know there's issues around that, but to go to MIT. So this amazing woman is in this little stand, and I'm talking like in a side alley selling yak shawls. And she invited me to sit for tea and told me about her son who won a scholarship to MIT, and like tears streaming down our faces as she told me about the plight of what she had been through, how she had to flee her area, move to India. She was a refugee, and then her son was able to go. So this is just not a regular shawl, my friends.
That is not a regular shawl. That is wrap. That is a love wrap right there. Wow.
And I think about it whenever I put on this shawl. I don't just wrap the shawl. I honestly, like, I think about that every time I put on this shawl. I think about her.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Sonia's going to make fun of me for this story for years now. She's going to make fun of me for years. But it's not ridiculous. It's amazing.
So everything has to have a deeper level with you.
No, I have like random shawls from Amazon also, but this is not one of them. Let me put it that way. This is not one of them. Thank you so much, Amity, for joining with us and putting up with us today. Oh, we really appreciate it.
Really, yeah. Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for listening to Sisters in Sobriety, and we will see you next week.
This was Sisters in Sobriety.
Thank you for listening and being with us today.
If you want to learn more about sobriety and meet your community, find us at sistersinsobriety.substack.com.
Are you a sister in sobriety? Then reach out on social media. We'd love to hear from you.
If you're feeling generous, leave us 5 stars and a review and follow us wherever you listen.
You'll never miss an episode. Until next time.
Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log in to your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.